Okay, we're up to patience, the chapter on society. Patience. So far in this chapter, we have not made much mention of perhaps the greatest Christian virtue that society can help us to cultivate. Patience. Patience. Why is it that society has this limitless capacity to help us to cultivate patience? What are we to be patient about?
Plenty. Everybody else.
Not myself.
Well, that's, I guess, what it all boils down to. We have tried in America to have an intentional society. We had a Declaration of Independence from corrupt old Europe. We established our own government that we have control of, more or less. And we have a constitution, and we have laws, society of laws, and it all works great. No reason for patience there, right? If it doesn't work right, we just holler. We have a long tradition of protest, and not a long tradition of patience.
We have an industrial society that makes it even more difficult.
Well, maybe, but you know, people were people, even when they didn't have machines. The principles for how you deal with society in a way that is spiritually beneficial are the same. This chapter is on society, and the book is about a layman in the desert, and since we are not able to be monastics, how can we apply the spiritual teachings to our situation in the world? And when it comes to society, we have more opportunities to practice patience than monastics do. So this is a major one that society can help us to cultivate. And Opperwall encourages us to begin with patience. Patience is developed in our actions with those who mistreat us. Anytime we are wronged, we are given a choice between patience and anger. Anytime we are wronged, and we are wronged in society a lot, and we are wronged in family life a lot, and we are wronged in our professional life, our work life a lot. And every time we are wronged, we have an opportunity to cultivate patience, or we can choose anger. You know, that's and well, the fact of the matter is we mostly choose anger. And when we go to spiritual texts and want to know how do I deal with this anger, and we repent of the anger and choose patience. Repent of the anger and choose patience. Such opportunities are like the negative image of our chances to perform charity and good works. It's like the negative image. Now we have digital photographs, but it used to be that you would have film and a camera, and you would click the shutter, and you would take the film out, and you would develop the film, and if you looked at the film, that would be your picture. Once you put a piece of print paper for printing photographs on it and exposed it to light, if you looked at that negative, you would see this shadowy, dark image that is the opposite of the image, whatever you were looking at, and the photograph that you will eventually show up with. That's the sort of thing that Opperwall is referring to. When it comes to our chances to perform charity and good works, it's like something we can do in the world. He's saying that the other side of that, the negative image of that chance to perform charity and good works, arises when we find ourselves in need and those around us fail to offer help. So we help others, that's a good work, but when we need help, where is everybody? And we have a choice between anger and patience. It's the negative image, the opposite. When we are in a situation where we need help, we're tempted to anger, or we can exercise patience and we're tempted to say, well, it's not fair. Not fair. Well, if everything were fair, we wouldn't have the opportunity to develop virtues.
There used to be historians who claimed that the founders of the United States of America were trying to develop a society so perfect that virtue was unnecessary. That may be kind of a crazy idea, but it does point out that patience is necessary in any society that isn't perfect.
This is why society, as it's being pointed out to us, is so helpful to us. Strangers who are driving on the road, and relatives are great spiritual aid, because they mistreat us. I'm on top of page 79. They mistreat us, they are unjust to us, not just in our direct relationships, but a lot of times in our direct relationships. Remember the difference between a direct relationship that we have with people that we know and meet in the flesh, live, and on the other hand, the mediated relationships. Mediated might be mediated by television or mediated by computers, the internet.
In the world of society, mistreatment and injustice go far beyond our mistreatment in direct relationships.
From angry rants in the media or on the web that make us angry, you know, and we can be patient with them instead. Severe economic injustices. There are severe economic injustices in our society. Anonymous crime, corporate heartlessness. And for corporations, everything is for the good of the corporation, and it strips the corporation of any moral responsibility. Companies were originally incorporated, and we are incorporated as a church, as a protection for the individuals who are members of the corporation. That was why they first started having corporations. Otherwise, something that happened, a legal liability, the human beings who were members of the company would be legally responsible. But if you're incorporated, you have a responsibility as a corporation under the law, but the individuals can't be prosecuted for the crime of the corporation because the corporation is a legal person. And it creates a situation where corporations end up having but a limited responsibility in society. And, you know, a lot of people may die, but it's not very often that corporations suffer capital punishment the way a human being would. I'm a human being, only he needs to kill one person. But a corporation could kill many people, and it's not put to death. So corporate heartlessness, it's kind of a function of the nature of the corporation, it seems to me. Those are some things that I've read about anyway. We could discuss that if we wanted to, whether that's a fair assessment or not. Most of us spend much of the day being subtly mistreated in one way or another in our mediated relationships, on television. And, you know, why must they holler and act like they have to be, everything has to be, well, we only have a certain amount of time. Here you have a station that is on 24/7, and they don't have enough extra seconds to slow down a little bit and speak. You know, I mean, I can turn the volume up if I can't hear them. Why must they holler? I don't understand it. So this is a mediated relationship that we have with everybody that comes on. I mean, they talk very fast and high impact, and, you know, I guess they want to maintain our attention, but it gets you kind of
emotional.
Yeah, emotional. The sense of urgency where there is no urgency, and the less urgent the message is, the more insistent they are. So, and this is mistreatment, I'm saying. You know, I'm being mistreated as a viewer. Mistreated in one way in our mediated relationships, and so what? How am I responding? With patience or with anger? There's lots of anger. I can turn it on and not even pay any attention to the content, and it makes me upset. It doesn't seem to me a great technique. It doesn't work very well with me. It doesn't.
But the masses, their anger.
But all those masses, I mean, masses are, there's no masses, it's just people.
Right, it's just people, but to most people, the anger that people are feeling is not at the media, it's at the individuals in the story that they're speaking about, and that's where they get control.
Oh, so the idea is, come be upset with me. So that's why they're talking so loud.
Yeah, they would be upset at this situation and these people involved, not at me.
Oh yeah, and Rick, we call that Ain't It Awful. It's an Ain't It Awful story. There's no real important there. It says, boy, isn't this terrible? You think this is terrible. Wait till you hear our next story. Right. It's really terrible. It's what we have instead of going out in the backyard and talking to the neighbor, gossiping over the fence. So is it gossip? Is a lot of it is kind of gossip. They call it news. And I want to be a responsible citizen, so I turn on the news. And it's like international gossip, national gossip, local gossip, gossip about people who have done terrible things. It dehumanizes us and encourages us to think of other people as objects and not persons. Because after all, they've done these horrible things. So, I mean, it's not like they deserve sympathy.
It encourages us to judge them or be angry because they've...
Yeah.
Because they've been unfair.
And Sharon's been saying last couple of weeks how enjoyable anger is. So I guess it's entertainment.
There are some people that you meet that their whole life is centered on finding something to be angry about every day. You know, they're not happy unless they're angry.
So it's an encouragement to anger 24/7 when you turn on the TV and listen to all this stuff.
That's why it's a relief when it's off. Sometimes.
And you can't wait to turn it back on, now. Why is that?
Because I like to sit there mindlessly and not do anything.
Fall asleep.
Which goes back into what we were talking about. It's like entertaining the whole situation of having people hate the sinner instead of the sin through media.
Now, what he's saying here is these are mediated relationships with the people that are on the television or the people that they're talking about. That instead of responding with anger and judgment, it's our opportunity to respond with patience instead with this mediated relationship. So turn on the TV and respond with patience. It's a different way of thinking about the use of the media, that's for sure. He's encouraging us to respond differently to injustice, not with outrage and resentment, but with another response. Consistent with the teachings of Abba Joseph on anger, the fathers of the conferences teach that Christians should face mistreatment with a very different attitude. Christians must seize the opportunity of their own mistreatment by exercising patience. And so instead of dialing down the TV, I need to dial down myself in my response. Patience. We have to seize the opportunity for our mistreatment and exercise patience. Patience reflects an inner humility leading to a gentle endurance of mistreatments. Humility of heart must be preserved. The kind that does not come from pretense must come from a deep humility of the mind, where a person tolerates wrongs done to him by keeping a spirit of goodwill. That's quite a challenge, to keep a spirit of goodwill and watch these programs, especially the news programs,
to me. I think it has more to do with person to person.
But he's encouraging us to think of these people on television as people, not as just deliverers of noise or a message or something. He says mediated relationships. And that's not...
Doesn't that necessarily have to be just a television? It could be a mediated relationship, would be something like a relationship.
Facebook.
No, something like, okay, you're going to the grocery store.
But that's a direct relationship.
No, there's a mediated relationship between you and, say, the person who's checking out your groceries.
It's a flesh and blood person.
Or handing out samples, or, you know.
Well, that's not how he's defined, earlier in the book and referred to back to it here now.
I don't think it just means through
media.
Yeah, well, actually,
it's not a direct relationship like a husband and wife or a parent and child or a friend or something like that.
Well, I'd have to find the page, but I think you're incorrect.
I'm afraid I had exhausted my stamina Wednesday night, and I was not able to do as well as I try to do on Wednesday nights. And so I was not able to refer back to the page that I ought to have and explain the difference again between a direct relationship and a mediated relationship, but that explanation is on pages 54 and 55. Operwal says, "We will focus on society as a network of relationships. We can break down these relationships into two broad categories. First are those that we will call direct relationships. By this, we mean those that exist between ourselves and everyone with whom we are acquainted personally, and thus have probably met face to face, from our friends to co-workers to those we meet on the street or at the store, or to neighbors or anyone else who happens to be around us. The second category comprises what we will call mediated relationships. These are relationships that we have with people whom we do not really know personally. These can be people like government officials, other voters, people in the media, journalists, entertainers, or even other drivers on the road. Anyone we might connect with through various forms of media, hear about in the news, or merely see from a distance without meeting. Mediated relationships have a very different character from direct relationships, as we all know intuitively. They tend to be more fragmented and disembodied. We are often less patient with people in our mediated relationships, more willing to judge them or lionize them, more capable of seeing their actions and character in black and white."
I think that he is making an effort in this book to reject the idea of the media as the media. I think he is emphasizing that there are human beings we know by way of the media. That's the definition of a mediated relationship. And he says even people that we don't know, that we don't encounter directly, that we only know through media, we should not just feel that it's okay to sit there and be angry at people on television because we don't meet them. And it is a massively different way of thinking about angry rants on the media, economic injustice, anonymous crimes, corporate heartlessness. There are no people in a grocery store here. Every one of those cases, there are people behind these situations that we don't have direct contact with, and he's saying that it is not okay to let them encourage anger in us and get us all riled up, that we need to deal with that anger and respond instead with patience. So that even those relationships with people who are behind the corporation or behind the media, well, that's what mediated relationships are, according to the definition of the book earlier in the chapter. I'm not sure why you reject that, but that was the definition. He is rejecting our standard way of understanding things and saying, no, even the anger that comes from relationships with human beings that we don't meet and don't know, that also needs to be dealt with by way of patience. Now, a monastic doesn't have that challenge, but we who are in this communication society where everybody walks around with a phone stuck to their ear or watching a screen, you know, you do more watching screens than you do talking to flesh and blood people. He's saying we need to include this as far as our spiritual life is concerned and not just say, well, it's okay because it's not a flesh and blood person.
And the fact is, there is this real possibility that having spent so much time in mediated relationships, we may find that we've been schooled in treating real human beings that we do meet as though we are in a mediated relationship.
Now, if I'm driving my car, there's somebody in front of me, like I was saying the other week, I was coming and the person in front of me wasn't taking the corner fast enough, and I was feeling like I could just go ahead and be upset with that person because I don't have direct contact with them. But then I find out that it's a parishioner, and then I'm very embarrassed because of my attitude. That is a relationship that is, at that point, mediated by the fact that we're both driving cars, and I actually do know that person. So those two things bump up against each other. It is a big point, because he's saying both direct and mediated relationships. We need to respond with patience rather than anger and preserve humility of heart. Like, if we don't have to try to preserve humility of heart, except with direct relationships and people we actually know, in our society, the way it is today, that would leave the major part of our lives bottom 78. Patience is developed in our interactions with those who mistreat us. There is no shortage of these experiences offered by strangers.
Yeah.
Strangers.
Okay. But you're just...
Colleagues, friends, and relatives.
Well, I guess maybe those are the kinds of relationships I'd rather talk about than being angry at the television. That's easy.
Well, you don't have to talk about that unless you're talking about the media, angry rants in the media or the web. But this is a major point that he is making, that we don't get to write those things off as impersonal relationships. That's a point. We don't get to write those off as impersonal relationships.
To me, it's really, if you're dealing with a person, they're interacting with you.
Mm-hmm.
He's not talking about the interactions of other people. Even if you're in a car and you're yelling at each other, waving hands, there is an interaction. If you're standing, looking at your TV, yelling, I know people who yell, and they're so mad at sports plays or the referees. There's not an interaction.
Yeah.
There's no interaction. I think that's what he's talking about, is that you don't have interaction with the TV. You don't
right.
have interaction, but they are people who are doing actual things.
Right.
And you standing there yelling at them, are you idiot, you stupid ref. I know people who just, that was the dumbest play, and they're really mad. They're just really mad.
And anger is enjoyable.
And we are embracing that anger and think it's great to call that stupid football player, dude, you didn't see that, or what, you idiot. You know, you yell. Anyway, I'm not talking about in my own home necessarily. I do have family members. My aunt won't watch football with my uncle. So, you know, I think that, to me, that's just kind of, when there's an interaction, you have two human beings who are whatever, whether you're waving each other. I don't think he's talking about more of the your reaction to whatever is happening at these people with the newscast. So even Facebook.
Right.
Even Facebook, you can read something and say, what?
Look at this stupid post.
Why is he putting that, you know, I don't know.
On page 85 in the middle, he says, we should make a special note here about mediated relationships. We call our attention to such relationships because they are particularly good sites for the work of developing patience. While our social instincts tend to push us to be at least fairly cordial, most of the time, to people who are actually in the same room with us, such instincts seem not to kick in as often when we engage in mediated relationships of various sorts. In mediated relationships, we find ourselves capable of thinking and speaking vitriol that we would never dream of voicing to someone in person. Perhaps that involves swearing loudly at the people on TV, or insulting an interlocutor on a web forum, or cursing a politician we particularly dislike. Whatever the mediated relationship, the problem is the same. On the other side of the coin, mediated relationships are also often the site of more acute and biting forms of mistreatment than we tend to receive in personal encounters because they are impersonal. But he says you can't treat them as though it's impersonal. I mean, the person is making you mad, but it's a mediated relationship and you feel like you can just holler back at them. But he says it's not a personal encounter, but yet we may be on the receiving end of the same kind of unchecked rancor we so often dish out in this mediated relationship. Yet precisely because of these facts, mediated relationships offer us a particularly clear opportunity for the development of patience, since we find ourselves escalating far more quickly in the context of mediated relationships than we do with personal ones. Mediation strips away most of the social niceties that can cover over the emotional reactions that, according to the fathers, are the fruits of the inner self. So, we don't get to, according to Opperwall, if we're going to live spiritual life in the world, one of the things that is relevant, especially in our time, is the fact that we include these mediated relationships as relevant to our spiritual life. Maybe we should watch more television during Lent because it's so good at giving us an opportunity to exercise our patience. Except that's not what we do. Or news. You're only allowed to watch news because news will make you angry quicker than just about anything. And none of these nice stories to make you feel good and all that, but just news. Then you have lots of opportunities for patience, right? We don't learn patience from news, right? Well, that's the way it is. Who used to say that?
That's the way it is.
Walter Cronkite.
Yeah, thanks a
lot. Good old Walter Cronkite, Uncle Walter. Christian patience, back to page 79. Christian patience means more than just taking whatever another person dishes out, which is what people would think when we're advised to be patient, put up with it. It is related not just to what we endure, but to our inner state while we endure it. That's the key, what's going on inside. And that's why in a mediated relationship with someone that we don't even know, but we react to, we deal with it by dealing with what's going on inside of ourselves. Lots of times people will ask, what do I do about this person, this relative, that I'm angry with? And they are expecting some kind of advice, practical advice. What should I do? And what you need to do is done inside. It's not a matter of how do I deal with this person who is the problem. That's what they're expecting. Or someone will say, well, I want some practical advice, what I can do in real life. Well, the practical advice is deal with yourself and stop trying to deal with the person and the situation, assuming that, well, I'm in charge, I want to know what to do next in order to maintain my, well, let's be nice as we can be, my Christian attitude and action toward this person. What do I do? Well, and the thing is, it's not what you do with that person. It's what you do inside of yourself. That's where the action takes place. And I brought along the definitions from Father Thomas Hopko on love. Agape is an action of perfect goodness for the sake of the other. So, an action of external or internal goodness for the sake of the other. The action that we need to take oftentimes is not an external action as though the object were to deal successfully with the other person in a Christian way in order to maintain my integrity as a Christian. What needs to be done oftentimes is an action internally that is oriented toward valuing and responding to another human being as another human being, even if it is a mediated relationship. Because if we treat them as an object, which is so easy to do when it is a mediated relationship, it will rebound upon us. And we will be the one who is angry. We will be the one who is not patient. We will be the one who is hateful. And our object is to deal by mental and spiritual action within ourselves to choose to repent of the anger or the judgment and embrace patience and love. So it's something that's done within ourselves. So saying that, well, it doesn't count because it's a mediated relationship, it's just some person that I don't even know that it's make me angry because what they say, it doesn't matter because what you need to deal with is within yourself. You don't get to act like this is somebody who deserves my vitriol or evil talk. And I think that's a kind of a breakthrough, to make that kind of point. Make any sense? Mm-hmm. She's not sure.
So if you look at the old phenomenon of the question, if a tree falls in the forest and there's nobody there to hear it, it doesn't make a sound.
Uh-huh.
So you got the referee on TV, where I'm driving down the road and there's a car going slow. There's a car behind him and a car behind him, and I'm pulling a trailer back here. The car that's right behind the car that's slow will not pass him when he gets a chance. So this car can pass, and I can't pass all three of them with a trailer. So I am saying all kind of nasty stuff, not about the guy that's in front, but the guy in the second car. He doesn't know what I'm saying. It's not affecting him one bit. Hmm. The only thing that's being affected is me.
Right.
So it's like, He doesn't know it. The referee's on the TV. He doesn't know it much, young man. He probably knows, but he shuts that out. But so it really affects me and not the person anyway.
Right.
And you're the one whose blood pressure goes up. And
yes.
Really, more and more upset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think, like with the regular relationships, you have that filter. You have that what's socially acceptable, and you're not going to, I'm not going to be mad at someone you're sure. I'm going to kind of not say it. You know, if I'm upset and mad at somebody, I'm not going to just, my mind blow up, you know. To me, it's a filter. You know, you're not going to act crazy, even though inside you probably feel crazy, but you just filter it. But with the mediated stuff, that is kind of like, it's easy, like the filter's gone, and it's almost like your true self comes out. When I say that, I mean that loosely. But you know, that all that stuff coming out, that we really should have paid, really, it's almost like we should pay attention more to that, because that's almost like our true self, what's going on, is because you're just reacting.
That's what Sharon means. Now, he does talk about pretense. The anger is there, but we don't show it, you know. And we pretend, you know, to be patient, but we're not. In fact, we could be very angry. And you're talking about a filter. That would relate to the sort of thing that Sharon has in mind, that there are certain socially expected ways of... And she's saying, well, that is kind of a mediated relationship. Well, it's not that different from the point that he makes when he talks about that sort of thing, and he says that not acting externally in an angry way or an impatient way, when you are actually angry and impatient inside, and that anger exists but you're not externally expressing it, you haven't dealt with the anger. The anger is there, you know, and it's not okay. You know, because your responsibility spiritually is to deal with that anger. Your responsibility doesn't end because you haven't had an outburst against that person. We're talking about someone who is engaged in spiritual life, and that has to do with the internal life. We're not being instructed in how to do what is socially acceptable and seems Christian-like to other people. It's about dealing with the reality of how you are inside. That's the nature of spiritual life. So this does kind of fit in with Sharon's idea that our behavior is mediated by society. It's not the same as mediated, I don't think, in the sense that he means it, but it makes for phony, inauthentic way of acting that is not the reality of your actual spiritual attitude toward the other person. You might be saying all kind of passive-aggressive things to that person, or say it in such a way that they don't even realize you're angry, but at the same time you actually are giving them a good shot, and you just say, well, they're so dumb they don't even realize I just gave them a good shot. You know, so all that internal stuff, that's what we're expected to deal with. Patience reflects an inner humility, leading to a gentle endurance of mistreatments. This is very different from controlling yourself in public so that you're socially acceptable. It's dealing with the reality. Real patience means responding to the anger of another with its natural antidote, namely love. And, you know, there were this three types of love, and from Father Hopko, agape, eros, and philia. Philia, friendship, is the one that is really focused on here in this book. At the bottom of 79, there is an example that's taken from the conferences that Abba Piman gives about St. Athanasius, who was asked by a pious woman that a widow be sent to live with her. Widows in the ancient world, it reminds us, were seen as particularly needy people, since they had no husband to provide for them and few other options for making a living. And St. Athanasius sent a very generous and kind widow for a companion to this woman. But she complained, the woman complained, that this widow was too nice. She was too little a burden. She was not able to help her in her spiritual life. So the bishop had another widow sent to her, this time the most bitter and intolerable that could be found. She had asked for a widow from the bishop, not for her refreshment, not for a pleasant companion, but so she would have a source of torment and annoyance. By living with this woman, she learned to subdue her passions and her anger, and she learned patience. And the pious woman sent thanks to the Bishop Athanasius for sending her such an excellent instructor in the art of patience. Elder Paisios, I think, told this story. I almost hesitate to comment on it. This is obviously why your father married your mother. I'll put it that way, which I never could figure out. You know.
So that's why I have the boys.
Yeah, children are great education and patience.
Yes. Falling way behind in my development.
Patience is precisely to respond to whatever degree of anger we face with Christian love to the same degree. So the more anger, the more love. The patient person naturally grows in love by actually using the mistreatment of the world as a spur to that love. Life in society provides no shortage of mistreatment and anger directed at us. If through patience this anger pushes us to love all the more, then we will find ourselves growing in love on an exponential curve. What's an exponential curve? Any mathematicians?
2, 4, 9.
Yeah, not just 1, 2, 3, but double each time.
Double,
yeah.
20,
like, each irritation, you know, the more anger, the more growth. More irritation. For the insults of other people that now push us in direction. Second, patience often allows us to live out the teachings of Abba Joseph regarding our responsibility for the angers of others. There's a lot of opportunity for that these days because there's so much anger. Unrelenting in her patience, the pious woman took responsibility for the widow's anger and so eventually began to dissolve it. And so the widow became less and less angry herself. Our patience is not always met by other people, eventually coming to love us more, but often it is. So you can't count on that transformation, but it does happen. Like compassion, patience is a tool of interpersonal healing, a tool of growth in the mutual purity of heart. Patience requires we see mistreatment for what it is. The angry widow's treatment of the pious woman was a violation of the latter's humanity, a totally unacceptable reaction. Had the woman excused the widow's behavior, and this is what people think that they are expected to do, when they come and they say, what do I do with this person who has done this terrible thing? And they are under the impression that the Christian thing to do is to excuse what has been done that is objectionable. People do this with forgiveness. They try to say, well, I guess I can understand why the person did it. I can put myself in the person's place, and I can see why that would, I forgive them because I can see that it's something that I could do. And no, it is, people do things that are terrible, you know, and we don't deal with it by saying, finding some way to say that it isn't terrible. It may be terrible. It may be real terrible behavior. That's not how we're supposed to deal with it. If she done that, if she excused the widow's behavior and pretended that the widow had done nothing wrong, she could not have used the widow's mistreatment as a spur toward love. This is something I think that is commonly misunderstood.
So what did she do instead?
Right. How would that look?
I don't understand.
I'm just guessing, but I guess it would be okay to, in patience, in love, to say that's not okay to whatever they did. I don't know, but to say I don't. How would that look? I'm really a little bit puzzled. Yeah.
Ask them, maybe pointing out, you know, please don't throw my glass.
What needs to change is not the other person. What needs to change is something in us.
Uh-huh. That's really the point.
That's really the point.
To be loving.
Instead of reacting with anger internally, you react with patience. Patience. I mean, she may continue to do the same things that she's doing. But to react with patience, it's being said here, is to react with love.
So maybe she got really mad, threw a glass across, hit the wall, broke the wall, and really...
And you cleaned it up.
You quietly and humbly, maybe praying, God help me, just clean it up. You know, it might, you know, not in a way that you're going to throw guilt, or, you know, just clean it up and go on. Maybe that would... Maybe somebody would respond in softness and think, I don't want to do that again. You know,
that's not the point.
No, that's not the point.
That's why Opera Wall said that patience is not always met by other people eventually coming to love us more.
Right.
That's not the point. You know, I mean, that's why, you know, this the pious woman wanted a really nasty widow so that she could respond counter to the way we usually respond. Not so she could improve the woman.
Right.
Maybe she would, maybe she wouldn't, but it's not the point, you know. Right. In fact, she would probably need a new nasty woman now.
I thought there was something you said earlier in the book about that it would soften, that it would, that it might or wouldn't, but that's not the point. I get that. Just to patiently deal in love.
These are not techniques as to how to go about dealing with other people in a, quote, Christian way. The assumption is that we want to engage in deep spiritual self-transformation. There's not lessons in how to get along in society. Our understanding of being a good Christian in society has to do with a whole bunch of rules about how you treat other people. And we're not against that. All that's good. But that's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about here is using all of the nastiness in society as an opportunity to change internally and not react the way we generally would, but to learn to react more and more as Christ acts.
It's sadly, it's just so boring.
It is. It is. And that's part of the point. We're supposed to recognize how different it is from the way we usually understand things. That's part of what we're being taught. I was hoping maybe to get through at least the part on patience, but I'll be patient, and next time we can pick up there. I know I disagreed with you, and you're probably disgruntled. Would you like to have an opportunity to straighten me out?
No, I've read it previously, but I hadn't reviewed it before from it. So that's probably why I disagreed with what you were saying.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next time, page 81.